सिद्धौमुखी भूमिम् पदानखामनीश्रिया उवाच ललितां वाचम् निरुध्याश्रु कलां शनैः. Stood and scratched the ground with her foot, which was radiant with the luster of her gem-like nails. Her head bent down, she spoke in slow yet charming accents, suppressing her tears. Purport. Devahuti was so beautiful that her toenails appeared just like pearls, and as she scratched the ground, it appears as if pearls had been thrown on the ground. When a woman scratches the ground with her foot, it is a sign that her mind is very disturbed. These signs were sometimes exhibited by the gopis before Krishna. When the gopis came in the dead of night and Krishna asked them to return to their homes, the gopis also scratched the ground like this, because their minds were very disturbed. Devahuti was very beautiful. This beauty is a result of past pious activities. As mentioned in the previous two verses back about her daughters, they were all so beautiful that they were like lotus flowers. All the parts of their bodies seemed like so attractive, like lotus flowers, and their bodily fragrance was also like fragrance of the lotus. So these are all symptoms of pious benefit, to be very beautiful, to be wealthy, to be intelligent, to be born in a high family. Devahuti was the king's daughter. So these are all symptoms of pious life. When a woman is beautiful, then all of her features are very beautiful. Here it's mentioned that her toenails were beautiful and radiant like pearls. So even the toenails are attractive. Actually, according to Ayurveda, these toenails are waste products. Hair, nails, they're waste products. They grow and you cut them. But somehow or other, by the arrangement of the material nature, that even the waste products are attractive. The man is attracted, beautiful hair, beautiful nails, everything beautiful. I have one godbrother. He was telling me how he got married. He was a brahmachari, and he decided that he would like to get married. And he noticed one girl, and he said that, I was attracted to her because I saw that she was a very good devotee and she had very small feet. So it was a charming feature, a fascinating feature, a very small feet. Otherwise, if you go to the shoewala, it's not a very attractive thing. It's just a question of, you know, size 7 or 5 or 10 or whatever. And if you go to the Bhaktivedanta hospital, then they do the x-rays and there are bones. You've seen all what a foot x-ray looks like, bones. And if you do further surgery or something, you see that it's bones covered with, I don't know, lymph and flesh and muscle and blood and all that kind of stuff. And then it's covered with a fine layer of skin, and it looks very attractive. So that one decides that I'd like to marry this girl because she has small and beautiful feet. This is called Maya's arrangement. Maya's arrangement. What's a foot? It's just something for traveling from here to there. But by Maya's aesthetic arrangement, even the foot is attractive. Even the toenails, just little pieces of whatever they are, not exactly bone and not exactly, they become attractive. And especially if the girl is very pious and beautiful, then the nails are very pearl-like and effulgent. And if they're not, then you go to the drugstore and you buy a little something, rose pearl cream or some exotic name, and you paint your nails with that, and then they become effulgent and beautiful, so that one is, then will be attracted. So, pada naka manishriya, so very attractive nails. This is Maya's arrangement. A man is naturally attracted by the beautiful features of a woman, by her toenails, by her foot, by her hair, by her eyebrows, by her fingernails, by this, by that. This is the arrangement, wonderful arrangement of material nature, that one is charmed by any small thing. This is the arrangement of Maya, the illusory energy. It's just a body, source of suffering, actually, for the person who has to live in it. But somehow or other, by Maya's arrangement, it's a little attractive, and one is bewildered. Prabhupada gave the example that these dolls, you know, like we have it in our exhibitions and so on, They're just straw and plaster or clay. But when they're painted, then they become very attractive. So similarly, actually, if you look at this body, especially those who have to do surgery and all that kind of stuff, it's not very attractive, but a little layer of skin over all the other stuff inside, and it appears so nice, and we become attracted. So this is the material nature's arrangement. And even if she's not attractive, then she goes out and buys some paint and some this and some that, and you get another face on top of the one that was there, and one becomes attracted. Then, uvacha lalitam vacham. She spoke in lalita vach, very pleasing words, the sound of her voice was very pleasing. Lalita. Lalita means very gentle and nice. So this is another attractive feature. The voice is so attractive. Those who listen to, now everyone watches television, but in previous decades they used to listen on the radio to various plays being performed. Maybe still it's done. And by the voice only, you get the picture. So, in some play, you get the picture that this girl is very beautiful, she's very attractive, she's very desirable, just by hearing the voice. Actually, she may be something, if you met her, she'd be something entirely different from your picture. But just by the voice, you get some idea. So the voice may be very attractive. Playback singers, they're getting so much money just so that people can listen to the beautiful voice. So the voice is attractive, and we were discussing yesterday that these are impediments to detachment. The beautiful physical features, the beautiful voice, and very, yes. And then the next thing, likanchyadho mukhi bhumim. This natural behavior, when a woman is disturbed, then she may scratch the ground with her foot. If you want to learn how to write, you have to go to school. But this kind of writing on the ground with the foot, scratching on the ground, that one doesn't have to learn. A natural expression. No one has to teach it to you. No one has to say, now when you're disturbed, then signal by scratching the ground. It's a spontaneous gesture, spontaneous activity. It's naturally done. So here, that feeling of anxiety, it's called body language. It's a language, and if you know, even practically if you don't know, but you consciously or unconsciously, the idea is communicated. For those who know it, they're conscious that this is being communicated. For those who don't know it, still they get a feeling something is going on. It's a kind of communication. With so much, actually very complex to sketch out all the grammar of it and the vocabulary, it would be quite a thing. But this is one of the ways of communicating. She's scratching the ground. That means she's saying that my mind is so disturbed, my mind is so disturbed. Even though she's smiling, as we read in the previous verse, she's smiling, everything's all right, no problem. But scratching the ground with the foot, that means mind is very disturbed, mind is very disturbed. And head is down also. Something is wrong, or she's not happy, she's disturbed. And Nirujashru Kalam Shanai. And finally, the tears are coming. The effort is being made. I won't cry, I won't cry. And still the tears are coming. These features create overwhelming sympathy. They create overwhelming sympathy. No one wants to see a woman cry. Please don't cry. don't be sad, don't cry. So much sympathy is there. And especially she's trying to not to cry, but still she's crying. It creates so much sympathy. Oh, now she's crying. So, again, it creates a great impediment. I can leave home, I can take sannyas, as long as she doesn't cry. But if she cries, I'll fall apart. Therefore, sometimes it's consciously and deliberately employed as a weapon in the arsenal. That I'll cry. Similar thing. One time one boy wanted to join our movement, and he went to his home to pick up some things that he would need because he wanted to stay in the temple. And parents were outwardly, all right, you know, everything's okay. But practically on the spot, his mother began having symptoms of a heart attack. And when the boy decided that, no, I'd better stay here at home and see that everything's all right, then all the symptoms subsided. So sometimes these signs, these gestures are deliberately employed, or else simply as a natural consequence of one's emotions, they come out. And then in an instance such as this, a man thinks, oh, her mind is so disturbed. And then the next thing is that one inquires, why are you disturbed? What's on your mind? Why are you in anxiety? And now your mind is involved with her mind. Now your mind is involved with her mind. And if there's anything worse than being a woman with a disturbed mind, a woman absorbed in her disturbed mind, it's being a man absorbed in the disturbed mind of a woman. And now the man has to give attention and sort it all out and help her and help her see it this way and help her see it that way and help her feel better this way and that way. And she approaches, my mind is so disturbed, can you help me? Yes, I'll help you, don't worry. And then she's so much helped and so much grateful that the next day she comes and says, still, my mind is disturbed again. Oh, that's all right, I'll spend time with you again and we'll work it out. So it becomes like a drug or like a... Yes, it's another trap of Maya, that the woman is approaching the man, and my mind is disturbed, you have to help me. And the man is being pulled in. And soon he's thinking about her and about how she feels and about how she thinks and about what's going on with this and what's going on with that and all the past sufferings that she's had and the poor girl and she really needs someone and everyone's rejected her and somehow or other and this and that. And it finally comes out that there's only one person in the world who can help this poor girl. and it's not Krishna. So this is Maya's arrangement, and by this arrangement of Maya, the world is going on. On the other hand, the same thing is going on in the same thing that's going on in the illusory energy is going on in the transcendental reality as a transcendental fact. Here in the material world, all these things that we've been talking about are based upon the mind, which is a manifestation of the illusory energy, manifestation of the material energy. Actually, it's by the mind that one becomes a man or a woman. A man, someone thinks, let me enjoy this way. Someone thinks, let me enjoy that way. And according to the shape of the mind, one takes the next body. As a man, as a woman, as a human being, as a demigod, as a dog, as an ant, as a this, as a that. What is that? Manas Chayam Upayan Upasevate? Someone know? Anyway, according to the Chakshus Shrotrus Sparshanam Cha Rasanam Granam Eva Cha Adishtaya Manas Chayam Vishayan Upasevate. According to one's consciousness, according to the mind, what's on his mind, he picks up a particular kind of ear, a particular kind of eye, a particular kind of sense of touch, a particular kind of all senses. All the senses are formed according to the mind. According to the mind. And then, according to the material senses that one picks up, one tries to enjoy a particular vishya, a particular object of sense gratification. The female monkey is not attractive to any of us, but the male monkey is jumping up and down for her. Because he has a particular kind of senses. And those senses are tuned to a particular set of sense objects. So the whole business of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, it's all on the basis of this material mind, and accordingly a material body, which are coverings of the eternal soul, temporary coverings of the eternal soul. And through these temporary coverings, the living entity is enjoying and suffering. Actually, he's suffering because he has enjoyment mixed with suffering. And enjoyment mixed with suffering means suffering. Just Prabhupada's example, sweet rice mixed with sand. There's no real enjoyment there. So, happiness, family happiness, and social happiness, and physical happiness, mixed with birth, death, disease, old age, anxiety, trouble from other living beings, trouble from nature, trouble from the body and mind, it all adds up to suffering. So everything is going on in the platform of this body and mind, and therefore we're suffering and thinking that we can enjoy. This is called illusion. But in the spiritual world, things are going on in a different platform. The Krishna is Sachidananda Vigraha. His form is not a product of the material nature. It's not formed of ingredients derived from the material godown. His nails are not waste products. His hair is not a product of some physical, chemical, physiological process. They're all manifestations of the transcendental energy, or of his transcendental Swarupa-Shakti. Abhinnatan, the Lord is Advaita. There's no difference between his body and himself. With his nails, he can manifest the entire cosmic manifestation. Mahatpadam punyayasho murari. Our feet are good for getting, you know, a pair of bata shoes size 7 or whatever, and that's what our feet are about. But Krishna, his, the entire mahat material nature is at the lotus feet of Krishna. And with his lotus feet, his lotus feet are being worshipped by the greatest sages, by the greatest demigods, by all the pure devotees. And or with his same lotus feet, he can smash the Kaliya Nag just by his lotus feet. So his lotus feet are transcendental, his nails are transcendental, his everything. Angani asya sakalendriya vrittimanti. Any of the limbs of the transcendental Lord can perform any of the functions of any of the other limbs. Because he's fully conscious. We can't eat with our nails. If I say, I'll put some dal and chapatis on your toenails, you'll be sad. No. The Lord can eat with his feet. He can. Trees can eat with their feet. They put their feet in the ground and they have their nourishment. We can't do that. But the Lord can, as he likes. Any sense can be used for any purpose and he can enjoy. So the Lord's body is Satchidananda. It's eternal also. We're getting temporarily some pleasure from this body, but it's deteriorating. Body is on its way out. Either it's on its way in or it's on its way out, but it's going to be finished. The Lord's body is eternal. The Lord's body is a source of all knowledge and blissful. And the associates of the Lord are also on the same transcendental platform. What is that? Yasya prabhutabhirya eva nijarupataya kalabhi. Yasya prabhaprabhavato jagadandako kati. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavatabhi. Ananda chinmaya ras. The gopis are manifestations of the Lord's transcendental energy. Radha Krishna pranaya vikriti ladhini shakti rasmad. The Radharani is the manifestation of the pleasure potency of the Lord, and the principal gopis are the immediate manifestations of that same pleasure potency manifested in different forms. They're nothing like the men and women of this world. In this world, the same, your wife in her next life may be someone's husband. And you in your next life may be someone's man, may be someone's wife. Everything's changing this way, that way. It's all just you know, like sometimes you see these, in Europe they used to have these balls dancing and so on and so on. And they would sometimes have masks. And they hold the mask in front of them and they appear to be this or they appear to be that. So we're like that. Now I'm a king. Now I'm a sage. Now I'm a man. Now I'm a woman. Now I'm a demigod. Simply masks. Simply temporary covering. Simply an illusion. Simply an illusion. But the Lord and his associates are beyond the illusory platform. Dhamna svena sadani rasta kuhakam. The Lord is the absolute truth. His abode is beyond the illusions of this material world. Rather, the material world is the reflection, perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Adhamula, na urdvamula dhashakam, ashrutam hinam uttamam. In the Bhagavad Gita, this material world is like a banyan tree with the roots up and the branches down. That means perverted reflection. It's not the real substance. The real substance is elsewhere. And we're trying to enjoy the reflection of the substance. That's not possible. We'll never enjoy. The bird is trying to get pleasure from the fruits in the water. That's not going to work. You have to get the real fruits. So these same features that are manifest in the material world. In the material world, they're genuinely causes of illusion and entanglement. All this body language finally spells entanglement. It finally spells entanglement. I become entangled this way or that way. There's different body, these are loving symptoms. There are also symptoms of anger and hatred, body language symptoms. And anyway, whatever we speak in this material world by body language, by real language, it may sometimes be affectionate, it may sometimes be the opposite. It may sometimes be inimical. But it's all simply a source of trouble. Sometimes enjoying, sometimes suffering, sometimes attracted, sometimes repulsed, sometimes for, sometimes against. We're in duality in this material world. But in the spiritual world, these symptoms are all genuinely enjoyable. And they're all spontaneous symptoms. Here in the material world, they may also be spontaneous, but they're spontaneous manifestations of the material nature at work. They're spontaneous. We're saying that a woman doesn't need to be taught how to scratch the ground in anxiety. It's a natural symptom. A natural symptom. A cow doesn't need to be taught how to lick the calf. Spontaneously she's licking. The boy doesn't have to be taught how to be attracted to the girl. He doesn't have to go to Bola's classes and take a course. They're automatically attracted by the arrangement of material nature. So the same thing is going on in the spiritual world, spontaneous attraction, but it's on the basis of the spiritual energy. It's happening by the eternal, as part of a natural part of the eternal reality. Krishna is eternally attractive, And the liberated soul is eternally attracted. And Krishna is eternally attracted to the devotion of the liberated souls. So in the spiritual world, this attraction is there between Krishna and his devotees. And that attraction is being expressed in different ways. Sometimes it's being expressed by affectionate expressions, by smiling, by sidelong glances, or in another relationship by patting the head. Yashoda or Nanda Maharaj is patting Krishna, "You're such a nice boy." Or the friends are expressing their love for Krishna by playing with him, by running ahead and wanting to be the first to touch Krishna, or by massaging his legs when he's tired from herding the cows. In so many ways, they're directly expressing their love for Krishna. And sometimes, in other ways, they're expressing anger, or they're expressing frustration. That also adds to the taste of the relationship. Just like sweet rice, it's sweet, but if you put a little black pepper in the sweet rice, it enhances the taste. It enhances the taste. Although it's contradictory, it's enhanced. Fruit is sweet, but you put a little salt, and it becomes more tasty. It becomes more tasty. Although it seems contradictory. Of course, you can't put anything. If you just put any spice, any this, that, then it becomes spoiled. Then it becomes spoiled. If you put chili in the sweet rice, then, although it's contradictory, it's not tasty. Who has done this? Who's the rascal? Or if you put salt in the sweet rice, then it's not at all pleasing. If you put mustard on the fruit, that is not very nice. So one has to know, one has to be expert, what goes with what nicely. So in the spiritual world, all of these tastes are presented in the most pleasing form and spontaneously. Just like Satyabhama, she's pleasing Krishna by being very pouty. Satyabhama is very pouty. Pouty, you know? She's contrary and gives a hard time. Rukmini is very submissive. Rukmini, Krishna was teasing her that you've chosen the wrong husband. You could have had any first class man like Shishupal and so many other highly qualified kings, and somehow you chose me. And I have no good qualifications. No one knows whether I'm a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. No one knows if I'm the son of Nanda Maharaj or the son of Vasudev. No one knows where I come from. No one. And I have so many disqualifications. You deserve to be provided for in a very first-class way, but I'm not very interested in material things. My devotees aren't interested in material things. I'm also not interested. And they're not interested in family attachment. I'm also not very much interested in family attachment. So the whole thing, somehow or other, it's a mistake and you've made a wrong choice. But better late than never, you can choose somebody else. That means Krishna is proposing divorce. She's his beloved wife, and they had so many children also. And Krishna's saying, well, you could start over, it's no harm. So Rukmini was so much disturbed, but she wasn't saying anything. She was not saying anything, not protesting, not arguing. But finally she was so overcome that she just collapsed. Like a banana tree hit by a strong wind. When we have those, you know, in the rainy season in Mayapur and the floods and the cyclones, everything, the banana trees all just get knocked out over. So Rukmini just collapsed like that, just fainted. She has that very submissive nature. Then she, when she recovered, she spoke to glorify Krishna and counteract all those words. And Krishna confessed that I was just trying to get a little taste by teasing you and making you angry, but don't be disturbed. So these are loving dealings between Krishna and Rukmini. With Satyabhama, it's another story. You gave a flower to Rukmini. What about me? What about me? Don't you love me? Am I not your wife? Why are you neglecting me? All right. Take the whole tree and bring it back to Dwarka. And Indra can object, but we don't care. He's a nonsense. So, different expressions among the cowherd boys also. Someone is very submissive and very gentle, and someone is always challenging Krishna that you're fighting with all other boys, but you're afraid to fight with me, and I can take you on, and you're just avoiding me because you're a coward. Not only a cowherd, but a coward. So they have different natures. Some of them are very funny, some of them are very gentle, some of them are very argumentative. And these are spontaneous, eternal features of their personality. And all these personal features are simply directed toward giving enjoyment to Krishna. They're all directed to giving enjoyment to Krishna. They're all different loving expressions. The boys, the parents, the gopis, elderly gopis, young gopis, the plants, the trees, the bees, the swans, cows, they're all spontaneously attracted to Krishna in a particular mood and expressing their love for Krishna in different ways. Therefore, in the nectar of devotion, you'll find these physical symptoms described, anubhav. Anubhav. They're expressions of loving ecstasy. In the material world, these things are expressions of bewilderment, kam, krodh, lobh, mada, moha, matsarja. We're expressing our lusty desires for material enjoyment, our anger when we don't get the enjoyment that we want, our greed, kam, krodh, lobh, mada, our madness. Actually, we're crazy, and we're trying to enjoy something which is not enjoyable. We're thinking we're this body, although it's not a fact, and we're trying to enjoy this dead matter as if it were substantial. We're all madmen, mudda, and moha. We're thoroughly an illusion. And matsarja, we're envious. Your garbage is better than my garbage. So this is the material world. And whatever we're doing is an expression of that, these material faults. But in the spiritual world, or in the devotional service of the Lord, everything is manifest as a symptom of ecstatic love for Krishna, because everyone is absorbed in ecstatic love for Krishna. And therefore everything is absolutely enjoyable. The anger is also enjoyable. Even if there's illusion, the illusion is enjoyable. If there's madness, the madness is enjoyable. Everything is enjoyable in the spiritual world, because it's all a feature of transcendental reality. It's all a feature of transcendental reality. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is the study of transcendental reality. Vejam vastavam atravastu shivanam tapatrayon namulana. In this Srimad Bhagavatam, one can understand what is vastu, what is actually substance, as distinct from illusion. We're thinking that the illusion is substantial and that the substance is illusory. People are hearing the pastimes of Krishna and they're thinking these are stories. And people are going on with their nonsense, false ego, and false enjoyment of matter, and thinking this is real. So exactly backwards. Or confused. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, Vejam Vastavam Atravastu, the substance is distinguished from the reality. Shivanam, for the welfare of all. This is our real welfare. We're thinking welfare means to do something for the body. That's not welfare. Welfare means how to bring the conditioned soul out of the illusion and into the substantial reality. This is Shivadam. This is actually the real welfare. And Tapatrayon Namulanam, it finishes the threefold miseries of material existence. That's welfare. Therefore, the great sage Vyasadeva has given this Srimad Bhagavatam by which we can understand the science of the Absolute Truth. Well, this Bhagavatam should be heard in the association of devotees. It should be heard with the purpose of bringing out our eternal nature, of coming to becoming detached from this material illusory world and becoming attached to Krishna, reviving our eternal Krishna consciousness. If we hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and seriously in the association of devotees, then our life becomes successful. Hare Krishna. Some question?
We could appreciate many things. And is there therefore no rasavas in the spiritual world? Is that what you are saying?
Yes, in the spiritual world, things are not incompatible. Everything is compatibly presented for the enjoyment of Krishna. But this rasabhas comes in the material world when a person who's inexperienced or inept tries to present the Krishna subject matter without properly understanding Krishna. Krishna is not pleased by this rasabhas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to meet with Swarup Damodar, Ramananda Roy, his intimate associates, and relish the topics of Krishna. And they were so expert, Ramananda Roy, that Swarup Damodar, they used to sing some, they'd catch the Lord's mood, that the Lord is feeling this way, and they would recite some verse and just enhance the mood of the Lord. Just enhance the mood of the Lord by expert understanding. But the Lord was so careful that he would not hear Krishna Lila presented by any other persons unless it was approved by Swarup Damodar. There were so many poets, naturally they wanted to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or have their work appreciated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so they would be very eager that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should hear what I've written. But the rule was that it had to be passed first by Swarup Damodar. Because if there was any rasabhas, the Lord would be disturbed. The Lord would be unhappy. The Lord would be displeased. Just like we don't like to taste anyone who's cooked sweet rice and put salt in that. We won't like that. So many inept poets, they would, by not being factually situated on the realized platform, therefore Prabhupada said, you know, sometimes devotees, they're very eager to write poetry and songs. Prabhupada said, actually, these can be written by the self-realized souls. They can be written because rasabhas. There was some example that one of the Lord's associates, Bhagavan Acharya, he was hearing from someone, some poet from Bengal, and he was very impressed. But this drama is really nice. This is really wonderful. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should hear this. It's really nice. So he was going on hearing. But the rule was, Swarup Damodar had to hear. So Swarup Damodar, the Bhagavan Acharya was asking Swarup Damodar, you got to hear this. It's really... Swarup Damodar said, you're a very gentle person and you sometimes, you know, you'll hear anything. Yadva tadva kavi, anything written by this or that poet you'll listen to. All right, finally he agreed. So all the devotees got together to hear what the poet had written. And the poet began with his verse of invocation. And the verse was very much appreciated. All the devotees were praising how nicely this verse has been composed. And it was written with all metaphor and allegory, and it was praising Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and praising Lord Jagannath. That Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like the soul of the body known as Purushottam, known as Jagannath. And he is given life in Purushottam Kshetra. And he's moving and so on. So he's praising Jagannath, praising Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and all the devotees as well. This is very nice. Then they turned to Swarup Damodar, and Swarup Damodar said, "You're a fool. You're murka. You're a nonsense. You're a fool. That you're not only a fool, but an offensive fool. That you think that Lord Jagannath is a statue. That he's like an ordinary idol or like a material body. And that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like the soul that enters the body. This is all aparads. There's no distinction between Jagannath's body and Lord Jagannath himself. And there's also no distinction between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Jagannath. But you've compared Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to a conditioned soul. As the conditioned soul enters the body, you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entering the body of Lord Jagannath. You don't know what you're doing. You're nonsense. So in this way, an expert devotee like Swarup Damodar was seeing that although it appears to be very nicely decorated with alankars and so, but it's contradictory. So this is the danger, that in the material world we'll misunderstand the science of Krishna. We'll go over our heads pretending to understand something we don't understand and make a mess. So the Krishna subject matter should be heard from the realized souls as presented from the authorized literature. Otherwise, you get this contradictory sort of... similarly in these mantras, people, you know, we go to Vrindavan and whatever is the song that year, we come back, you know, humming and singing whatever is the big thing on the cassettes. What is it this year? Last year it was a different one. This year it's a new one. What is it? Yeah, yeah. And last year it was this Choti Choti Khan and all that. So, you know, there's so many things that you pick up in Vrindavan. And they're not all products of self-realized souls. So it's so much business and so much pretense. And we go, or so much concoction. Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham, so on and so on. And we think, oh, it's Vrindavan, and, you know, I'm bringing back something, little dust from Vrindavan. But it's not the right thing. Rasabhas, or Sahajya, so many nonsense things one can bring back from Vrindavan. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was a Jagadananda Pandit who wanted to go to Vrindavan, and he went, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, go to Vrindavan, go straight to Rupa Sanatan, just associate with them, and don't turn right or left. Because even though the Brajbasis are transcendental, you won't understand what they're up to. You'll get offended, you'll offend them, or you'll pick up something which is not the right thing. So just go to Rupa Sanatan, they'll properly guide you, you'll get the taste of Vrindavan, and then come back. So in that way we have to be guided. Therefore tad vigyanartam sa gurumeva bigachchet. If one wants to understand the science, one has to be guided by a bona fide spiritual master. Not just that we go to Vrindavan and pick up the cassettes and some Goswamis spin us around. And no, not like that. Something else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I was appreciating very much the point you were making about how attractive is the voice of a woman. You were saying all aspects very attractive, but especially this voice aspect. So it brought to mind the Lord Chaitanya running to the temple, and thought maybe you could discuss this pastime. And
of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's not that he was attracted by these sweet features of the voice. We're attracted by that, you know, we hear some voice and the voice is so beautiful. But actually she was singing with such devotion for the Lord. So the Lord became attracted that this singing is so beautiful, it's done with such devotion. So he was running toward that singer to embrace, oh, who's singing so nicely? And then Swarup Damodar picked up on what was going on. He saw that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in ecstasy, he's running forward. So he at once, my lord, that's a woman who's singing. And as soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this word, woman, he froze. He at once froze. Then he said, Swarup Damodar, you've saved my life. You've saved my life. Yes. Yes, there was another question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you said that good qualities can lead from detachment.
Good qualities can
lead from detachment.
Lead from detachment.
But we find that Krishna consciousness is a positive philosophy, and generally, if some devotee has some good qualities, like he has a good voice or he does something very nicely, plays mridang nicely, plays kartal nicely, generally, then we hear that we should be detached. But the problem is when we have something good and we know that we have to be detached, we generally try to be pessimistic. We become pessimistic rather than optimistic. So how should we become detached as well as at the same time be optimistic?
How did we get into such complicated territory? I don't remember that I said that good things come from detachment. Actually, detachment itself doesn't lead to anything very wonderful. The Mayavadis may develop detachment, But that doesn't really lead to good quality. The detachment itself is a good quality, and they may be relieved of so many bad qualities that come from attachment, because that's described, that by attachment you lose all your good qualities. You lose all your good qualities. But the simply by detachment, it doesn't mean that all your good qualities come. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavat chakinchana sarvargunaistatra samasite sura. The good qualities actually come from devotion. Harava bhaktasya kato mahaguna. Even if you're detached, if you have no devotion for Krishna, then you have no good qualities. Manoratena sahi dhavatobe. You just have a prostitute mind which is running here and there, but you don't actually have good qualities unless you're a devotee of Krishna. And if you're a devotee of Krishna, then all the good qualities automatically come. So, and then if you're a devotee of Krishna, everything's optimistic, and if you're not, then everything's pessimistic. Is that okay? Yes. And we should stop soon, huh? Because we're going a little long. Somebody should give me orders. Maybe last question. Okay.
Maharaj, I've heard about the symptoms of a Mahapurusha. You know, he has hands longer than his knees, and his nails are pinkish. In different, in Prabhupada's books, we read about the different symptoms of a Mahapurusha. Do they manifest because of the past pious activities, or is it arrangement of Krishna that his bodily parts should be designed in that way because he is a Mahapurusha? Is it due to past pious activities?
Or?
Is it due to past pious activities
or
of that Mahapurusha?
Rather than?
Krishna's arrangement because he's a Mahapurusha.
Pious activities or Krishna's arrangement? First of all, that he's doing pious activities, that's arranged by Krishna. That there's some result for pious activities, that's arranged by Krishna. But if there's devotional service, then there's direct involvement by Krishna. Otherwise, it's just pious activities. By pious activities you get, and actually just by pious activities you don't actually become a Mahapurusha. Actual Mahapurusha is a devotee of Krishna. And then everything is arranged for that devotee. Then all of his, then everything about him is good. Even if it's not, just like Vyasadeva, he didn't have beautiful bodily features and so on, ugly looking. But his features are transcendental. The beauty or the ugliness, they're transcendental when they apply. Therefore, one should not judge a devotee on the material platform. A devotee may sometimes have these wonderful features, or he may not. Sometimes it may seem that he's got some imperfect feature. He's born in a low family, or he has some physically unattractive feature. But that's not the ultimate thing. We have to see what the devotee is, how he's engaged in devotional service, and how he's speaking the message of Krishna. Otherwise, if you just go by bodily features, then we were passing on the road, and someone was pointing out a big queue of people standing outside of one building, one big house. And devotee explained to me that those people are gathered to get darshan. What darshan? Amitabh Bachchan. So, beautiful bodily features. That's not the... Then Amitabh Bachchan becomes, you know, a Mahapurusha. So the real thing is how the person's engaged in the service of Krishna. All right, shall we stop here? Hare Krishna, glories to Srila Prabhupada.